Katrina took up a lot of space in the media, just as this weekend's Hurricane Irene that hit the east coast of the United States and Canada was plastered across newspapers and television screens and occupying the airwaves. Did the media approach both events through the same lens, or were there changes, especially with respect to effects along class and race lines?
Well, you know, I think there's a fundamental misunderstanding amongst much of the media over what the lessons of Hurricane Katrina are. I think that the real disaster of Hurricane Katrina is twofold. First, it's the disaster before the disaster, the way that New Orleans had faced disinvestment and economic... So, as I was saying, there's this disinvestment and economic disempowerment that happens in New Orleans decades before Hurricane Katrina. What Hurricane Katrina did was really highlighted the problems that were already there. Then the second part of this disaster is this disaster after the storm, the way disaster profiteers came and basically used the opportunity of people being outside the city to push through this agenda of privatization of healthcare, education, tearing down public housing. And so, you know, too many people think the lessons of Hurricane Katrina are the lessons of a disastrous hurricane. Hurricane Katrina was not that disastrous a hurricane just in itself. The wind and rain that hit New Orleans was a Category 2 storm, which the levees should have been strong enough to uphold. In fact, if the both Bush and Clinton administration had put the money into levee repair that they were supposed to, instead of, especially with the Bush administration, taking that money out and putting it towards the military instead, the levees would have been strong enough to withstand the storm. So, you know, there's certainly lessons about climate change, which we can take from this, that storms are more powerful because of climate change. There's lessons about hurricane preparation. If you compare Cuba to Haiti and see that Cuba, has very few deaths from hurricanes, while Haiti has many more deaths from the same storms as they go through in the same region, you know, that hurricane preparation angle that I think people talk about with Irene is important, but it's really missing the true story of the disaster that happened in New Orleans. And that disaster was highlighted by the storm, but wasn't really about the storm.
Describe the change in power through elected officials in New Orleans.
We've seen a real civic disempowerment in New Orleans. You had the largest union in the city, which was the teachers' union. It was the mostly African-American union, ceased to exist. The entire staff of the public school system was fired. And, people were, of course, displaced in the period after Katrina. Now, many African-Americans have come back, although the population still is 100,000 less or more than 100,000 less than it was pre-Katrina, and most of those people that haven't been able to come back are African Americans. But where you've really seen this civic disengagement and this disempowerment is in who is politically in power in the city. We've gone, from, for the first time in a generation, from an African mayor to a white mayor, an African American majority city council to a white majority city council, African-American majority school board to a white majority school board, the district attorney, the police chief, all of these positions shifted over. And I think for many African-Americans in the city, it's been representative of this disempowerment, this disengagement that has gone along with this disempowerment we've seen with, again, the tearing down of public housing, the closing of the main hospital that served poor people, and the school system, which was taken away from the school board and basically put in the hand of these charter school operators.
I think many people, or some people, I should say, in New Orleans disaster, New Orleans, as sort of a blank slate. Can you describe what that means?
Absolutely. That was, again, part of this disaster, that with the people outside of the city, these New Orleanians that self-described themselves as YURP, young urban rebuilding professionals, saw this opportunity that they could, you know, they worked in urban planning, architecture, education, and they could basically push through all these changes without having to get permission from the people that live there. Now, as poet and community organizer Kalamu Yassalam said, it's not a blank slate, it's a graveyard, and they're doing these experiments over people's bodies. Or civil rights attorney Tracy Washington said, when I hear experiment, I think of Tuskegee and the ways in which these experiments have been done traditionally on African Americans without their consent. And so much of this post-Katrina period comes down to who is going to lead the change, not just what will the changes be, But will these changes be accountable to the people most affected? Will the community have a say? Will they be able to dictate what their city looks like? And that is really the crux of what this struggle is about, and what all of these struggles in this post-Katrina period are about. And if there's lessons to be learned, it's along those lines of accountability, of what will change look like, of who has a say in what their city looks like, and what the systems of the city, whether it's the criminal justice system or the education system, what they look like.
Can you tell me, why the reformation with the school system? Why did they change it from a public school system with the largest union in the city to charter schools?
You know, it's a longer discussion, but here's the very short answer. The school system was definitely broken pre-Katrina, and you had two different camps in terms of why people thought the school system was broken. I think for many people in the city, especially many parents in the school system, many African Americans in the school system was 98% African American, many people thought that the problem was not enough money for the system. There was underfunded. We had the lowest teacher salaries, the lowest spending per student in the entire country. On the other hand, many people in the political and business elite in the city thought that the problem was teachers were overpaid, teachers couldn't be fired, there was too much power in the hand of a school board that they saw as corrupt. And so they felt that they could change the system if they could take away the power from the teachers, take away the power from the school board. They never would have been able to do that with people in the city, but with people outside the city, they got to have that. And this became sort of this template for this attack on teachers and this attack on public schools that we later saw in around the whole country. A lot of people, I'm sure, have heard about in Wisconsin, where Governor Scott Walker did a similar thing of basically taking away the union rights of teachers and attacking teachers as part of this campaign. Governor Chris Christie in New Jersey, similarly, has been attacking teachers as the problem with the school system. Indiana, similar programs. So we're seeing these on a national level right now, but it was really previewed with New Orleans, with an attack on teachers, an attack on local governance.
That the idea that teachers are at fault seems to be a somewhat Republican idea. So can you describe the change that took place in Louisiana from pre-Katrina, where it was mostly a mostly Democratic state, to post-Katrina, there was only one senator who was Democratic?
It is a Republican idea, and yet at the same time, Democrats have been a big part of it. If you look at this film, Waiting for Superman, which was done by the same director as the Al Gore film, An Inconvenient Truth, this is definitely a liberal Democratic Party filmmaker, but they were putting forward a lot of the same ideas of blaming teachers. You actually had a tour around the U.S. that was supporting the idea of charter schools that featured Newt Gingrich, the Republican, and Al Sharpton, who is certainly a left-wing Democrat, and they're saying they agree on charter schools. So what you had is this liberal elite that also is willing to attack teachers, willing to attack teacher unions, and willing to support this idea of charter schools. And let me just say as a side note, charter schools are not all bad. It's not that we're fighting charter schools, but the problem is this whole idea that you can just make these cosmetic changes by changing over to charter schools, or that you can change who the teachers are, and that there's some kind of shortcut to actually giving schools the funding they need. If you want to really change a school system, you need to salaries for teachers, you need to have smaller class sizes, and you also need to change the economics of the area. If kids in those schools don't have economic opportunities when they graduate from school, what's their incentive to graduate from school? And so, you know, it's something that both liberals and conservatives in the U.S. have been guilty of, is really blaming teachers for these problems. But, you know, to get back to your question, certainly on a Louisiana scale, it's been part of this overall southern shift to Republican power structure. The Democratic Party is basically not even a factor in Louisiana politics at this point. It's almost completely dominated by Republicans, and extremely right-wing Republicans at that, on a statewide level. And you can definitely say that Katrina is one part of that factor. You know, New Orleans was a Democratic stronghold, and by being 100,000 people smaller, that's 100,000 less votes on a statewide level that the Democrats could have had.
Can you describe some of the police violence that took place during and directly following Katrina, and the role that police now play 6 years later?
Well, New Orleans is one of the most violent and corrupt police forces in the country. And, you know, going back decades, you have this problem of police violence in African-American communities and a lack of accountability for police that commit violence. Series of deaths over the years. There was a rash in the 90s, and we had some federal intervention there, because what we've always found is the local system is unable to police the police. So when police have done killings, there's almost never any accountability that they face from internal police investigations, from the local district attorney, from the U.S. attorney, from any of these checks and balances we have locally. There's no system of accountability. Things really went into overdrive with Katrina. For example, on September 2nd, just a few days after the storm, Henry Glover, a young African-American man, was shot by one police officer sniper. Other officers took his body and burned it behind a levee. Danny Brumfield Sr., 45-year-old African-American grandfather, was shot by police officers with a shotgun, who shot him in the back in front of his family and scores of witnesses. The next day, September 4th, on Danziger Bridge, a group of African-American civilians crossing the bridge, a group of officers come on them and decide, because they're black and because they're still in the city at this point, that they must be criminals, and they start firing on them. They kill James Brissette, a 17-year-old who's described by friends as nerdy and studious. They shoot him in the back several times and kill him. They shoot at Susan Bartholomew, a 38-year-old mother. Her daughter, Leisha Bartholomew, 17 years old, tries to shield her body's mother with her own, and they're both shot several times. Susan Bartholomew's arm is shot off of her body. Leisha's cousin, Jose Holmes, is shot several times. He needs a colostomy bag. He barely survives. Ronald, a mentally challenged man, is shot by one officer. Another officer runs up and stomps on him and kicks him until he's... So you have this extreme violence. But even more than that, you have this cover-up that went on for years afterwards. Officers had secret meetings where they aspired to plant evidence, invent witnesses, write and rewrite their stories of what happened. But the important part of this story is the fact that although every system we had in the city failed us, there was a movement led by the families of those most affected, the victims of police violence, that fought back. The Madison family, the Glover family, the Bartholomew family, were struggling against this wall of official silence for years to get these stories out. And they were ultimately successful in not just getting these stories out, but in pressuring the Justice Department to investigate. We've now had more than a dozen convictions of officers involved in these killings, some of them facing life in prison. And more than that, we're looking at, yes.
I'm going to have to cut you off there, but I do understand justice was achieved for some of these families?
Yeah, and we're seeing a Justice Department in, oversight of the police department and of the city jail. And so that's even more key, because we're going to see systemic changes. And that's what these families have been fighting for, and that's what they've won. And that's why I think people around the country can learn from this post-Katrina experience, is the way that people have organized at the grassroots and fought to make systemic change.
Flaherty, thank you very much for coming on and talking to us.